This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
One thing that's got clear with this whole business is the any gauge or measure you take away for reference, in other words, for use for yourselves, has pretty clearly got to get closer than the usual context of university English courses allows. For example, I'm just reading some of the questions on this test, English 434, Contemporary Literature. And for example, thinking of all this discussion of the Duende, here's how it comes out on this test. Section B, answer two questions in Section B. And number five is, quote, to D.H. Lawrence, the mystical awareness of the core of otherness in the other person is the basis of a true sex relationship, not Whitman-esque merging, end quote. And it says, as a critical comment, is this statement accurate, half right, or wrong? Discuss. Let's see. And you've got to... Well, I know some of you are going back to wherever with some misgivings, but I think it comes to Pound's insistence that any of us has to be prepared to educate himself. And universities have one overwhelming use, that is, they have tremendously wide physical services. I mean by that they have libraries, they're quite frequently centers for people's exchange of all, thinking music and film. Experimental film, for example, is hard to see in other contexts. I was thinking, as here in the spring, you had Brackage show his first major part of his Dog Star Man. So that it's an experience I think that any of us has gone through. I don't mean to sound like Sam Smiles, but the point being that when you get hung on whether or not that's an accurate question, you see, then you're in trouble. Or, for example, three, using Yeats' poetry to illustrate your points, discuss in separate paragraphs Yeats as a social commentator, as a visionary, as an egotistical rhetorician, as a poet, and as an interpreter of man's role in fate. And so on. You may arrange your paragraphs in any order you think best to make them any length you wish. Do not assume that each topic is a valid one. But these are beautiful. I can see myself at 8:30 in the morning trying to come to grips with that. You know, I don't. But this is
the problem is at 8:30 in the morning to attempt to fit one's thinking process into some formula like that
is difficult.
Is enough to stop the thinking process entirely. It would stop mine.
But don't, in other words, don't be dismayed. And don't assume that there is anything more on the other end than there is on this end. Equally, back and forth. So that I feel that the most accurate kind of means you are off is simply the chance to read at length. And to write at the moment, there is, I think, an extraordinary freedom in terms of all the possibilities of writing. I think that the last 10 years have been a terrific breakthrough into all manner of kinds of writing. Not simply, in other words, I don't think you're stuck with one predominant school leading the pack. So that I was thinking again in my own experience in the 40s. When the weight of the new critics was so decisive and so articulate that actually in any classroom it was difficult, for example, to bring up any discussion of Hart Crane such as we had a few mornings ago. It was impossible to get any serious discussion of Whitman, and one suffered accordingly. That is, one met the hostility of most frequently of say the professors, if you wanted to talk about these things, they assumed that you weren't serious or that you were not paying attention to their own attitudes.
When I went to school, the discussion of poetry was limited to the discussion of the ideas, or the idea content of a poem, and one was supposed to manipulate that, extend it and compare it to another idea content. So, which finally winds up in India. Someone was studying for his final English exam, came up to me on the street and said, have you read Milton? I have to write, do my exam on Milton today. So I said, well, I read him, yeah. So he said, well, I have to know something about Milton. Can you tell me what was Milton's philosophy of life? What was his conception of having of his contact with Milton? And this is what he was taught as a contact with Milton. And he had to know a series of key phrases, actually, that he could fill out as a philosophy of life, so that there was actually no intercourse between him and Milton at all.
I'd like to put it back to you, though. What anybody want to give his impressions of what we've been doing, or not so much, not to limit you to that, but anybody want to bring anything in that we can do, work with or start with? I'm frankly at the end of my rope.
Is there anybody here who still feels left out?
Yeah.
Is there anybody here whose idea system has not been included?
Who wants?
Or completely dissipated.
But we were going on Wordsworth the last time. I think most of you have read the preface to the Lyrical Ballad. You have that. You can get it. There's an anchor edition of the first printing of that book, which is it's pleasant. But actually, it's curious. When I was in college, it was Coleridge who seemed the great man because of the intricacy of his thought and the range of it, detail, and the work on Shakespeare, for example, I like. The Biographia Literaria, for example, I read it like I frankly read Stendhal for the way he thought.
But Dejection, I know.
Yeah,
the only Dejection was the one that everybody picked up on.
Yeah. Which was the closest to this other impulse that Wordsworth had.
Well, what did he say? Pang, a word without a pang.
Yeah.
Depression without a feeling at all. Yeah. That was bothering him. And so everybody then moved over to Wordsworth to find out
what he meant. Yeah.
Well, Wordsworth apparently still had some feelings.
I didn't read Wordsworth until about 4 or 5 years ago. And I remember that section about the boat, where he takes the boat and goes out into the lake. And then later, reading more through there. And then the ice skating, and then so on and so forth. And then the large odes. But it's curious that we've come round again to that whole issue of where this thing is located, where these impulses occur, and where they take on their direction, or what they take the direction from. And that preface is extremely useful. I mean,
what does he say? I don't remember. Well, I mean, all I remember from
the, it's the sense of
the common speech or something like that.
I don't know if I can quote it accurately, but the. The primary point is this emotion recollected in tranquility, this sense of and equally the sense of the writing occurring in this complex of such intersection of feeling, so that you don't have an obtrusive pattern that you're using actually the impulse of your feeling as this complex of recollection in response to it then and there. Robert? How can you characterize? How can one characterize simply the sense of impulse or the sense of emotion? The use of emotion that Wordsworth has in that. To me, it's an accumulation of energy. But then, that's a hard question.
What I got out of Wordsworth was just those places of being there.
Yeah.
So I didn't really worry about what picture was trying to
Charles has been using the phrase emotion recollected in tranquility, and you have. And I still haven't quite understood in what way you see what he meant.
Take Charles'
statement. Well, still, let me talk. When I went to school, everybody kept talking about emotion recollected in tranquility at the time. I didn't like it because they're all sitting around real tranquilized, not having any emotions, and objecting to anybody getting excited in the poetry. So that phrase then, I never had any good associations with that phrase, but apparently something,
well, here's,
you've had a different experience of it.
Yeah, simply that when I read the whole preface, this tag phrase then fits into a sense of process, which is very, for example, very close to Charles's, where the take that phrase is energy transferred from where the poet got it, and then it has in parentheses he will have some several causes over to, all the way over to the reader. Well, this sense of an energy transfer, or what becomes in Wordsworth's writing, I think he calls it force, or something very simple. But I mean, the context is curiously almost precisely the same as Olson's. In other words, the recognition, which I felt was a primary one, that in writing you are not imposing an idea structure upon, you know, words.
Or a feeling structure.
But you're not using any kind of pattern arrived at outside the occasion of writing. This is the
occasion of writing being the time of writing.
The moment of composition is what Wordsworth locates that early, in the sense of as a prime in any act of writing.
Now, the moment of composition, is that the moment of tranquility, speaking of?
I suppose that's what he means, and he may mean it simply
in the time when you start out tranquil, and during the course of the writing, recollect an emotion.
The important thing in his statement is that he was really saying that in his tranquility there was emotion.
Yes.
Because there's plenty of tranquilizers going around.
And these don't allow that.
And there are powerful emotions in Wordsworth, but he kept. I don't. The thing is that anything become a part of the poem, and this is what his idea of the poem was.
I think by tranquility he means simply a state in which you are allowed to write, literally, by which I mean where you're not on chopping wood or doing something that makes it impossible. Yeah.
I'm curious, since you've got the original emotion,
yeah.
You have tranquility, during which you recreate an emotion into.
Yeah. But it's wouldn't it be more accurate to say an emotion is recreated rather than
recollected?
But I think tranquility.
No.
I think, as a matter of fact, tranquility is the receptive state which you can receive the return of the emotion.
Yeah. Reaction. Yeah. Series of reactions. Anyhow, it's an interesting
thing. Tranquility was an ideal of being a philosophical poet. Well,
yeah.
If you're a dramatic poet, you wouldn't want tranquility.
No.
You want emotion recollected in drama.
Yeah.
And if you were a composition, it would be a composition. The thing about tranquility there was the mood of the poem, or mode even of
the
poem. Thought poem and of what that Wordsworth thought being philosophic was. He's tranquil about the world. So what is there that I don't know? In my opinion, in your mind, is that it is recollected and it isn't really the poem itself is not an agency of emotion. I
mean, no.
Emotions happened in life,
and they happen in the poem.
Other times, and is a source of emotion and experience that can be used in the poem.
Well, remember, Robert, the letter you wrote me after seeing. Donald Hall's anthology. I mean, I remember when I saw the first copy, I was pleased that I was included, you know, in that social
thing. Depravity, we all.
And then there was a kind of dismay when I saw the whole thing together, because it was hardly the excitement I'd hoped it might be. And then I remember you wrote a letter saying what Hall seems to have bypassed completely by the inclusion of myself, Robert, Denise, and Gary Snyder.
We're supposed to be the tranquility.
We're the tranquility.
Yeah, I looked at it.
No.
I saw something and I said, ha ha, they've been playing.
It's that, I think your phrase, or where you put it, was that Hall has missed completely the basis of our writing, which is primarily the whole issue of what can happen in the writing of a poem as opposed to what a poem can be used for. And that comes out very markedly in the anthology. I found interesting the juxtaposition of your poem beginning the line by Pindar next to Lowell's work. It was very curious because Lowell, whom I have respect for Lowell's technical abilities, But I found that there was a descriptive element in Lowell that I've never liked. I mean, by that, where he's talking about something, and where the actual impulse is allowed only in reference to that, you know, only in spite of that. And I think I don't want to misrepresent you, but I think you said, well, Paul's missed completely the fact that we are working upon quote inspiration, that it is an issue of this order, that it's not something where we're not making doilies or even the most beautiful objects or whatever to call them as patterns, but we are working from primary impulses in the act of writing, and that the form of the poem is an issue of that fact or of that state. But no, I thought we had.
Well, I don't think if just on the issue of anthology, nothing served by being put in the company of poets who are not really doing what you're doing, and nothing at all is served. It's just a wholly open confusion
for the reader.
Well, I presented enough anthologies that you had to go to a school that didn't have anything in them. But did you want something in there? No, really.
No.
You wanted to find the book where they were.
No.
Well, what is served is a reevaluation of your...
But by whom?
The people like Paul now will consider including you in an anthology. That's about all, by being invited to a party you don't want to go to. And,
yeah.
And really one should have the right to decline. I mean, more than that, it's good sense to decline and not go to one of those gatherings.
Well, Alan, you had the problem in reference to the Penguin books in England, those three in one, where they wanted to put you in with who were the two English?
Martin Bell and another poet, a couple of young English poets whose work I didn't know very well, but I'd read and didn't like.
It's quite, yeah.
Well, I felt that I was being used in that way.
To sell the poem?
Well, you know, I got monomaniacal about it.
Well, I'm sure we were being used to make it look like Donald Hall was very tolerant of the new thing. And he pointed out, actually, specifically in his introduction, he pointed out that he had distinguished that we were really good poets and Alan was the best poet. So that inferences we never intended were drawn from our conclusions. Although we really couldn't be said never to intend them. I mean, anybody could have read the book before that came out about what was going to go on.
I think beware of any anthology except as what it gives you literally for use. In other words, I respect very much, say, Donald Allen's anthology, simply that it makes available a number of poems that are otherwise, for example, Edward Marshall's Leave the Word Alone. I don't know where else you'll find it. And there are a number of poems of that kind. Also the material, but as Don was saying last night, it seems that more people talk to him about the poet's statements at the back of the book than they do about the poems.
Is everybody here familiar with that poem by Marshall, Leave the Word Alone?
It's a beautiful one.
That's in the Don Allen anthology.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you?
Marshall's?
He was measuring. If you look, he keeps the coherence by literally keeping a balance of syllables. Literally, leave the word alone. It is dangerous. The verse moves by a curiously strict sense of how many syllables are literally in each of these phrase groups.
Really, is measured that way?
I feel it is.
I've never measured that. Well, I've got it on a tape, and it seems to move in and out of various rhythms intuitively.
It's an intuitive poem.
So what usually happens when a poet's really being intuitive and not just setting up a steady beat going by is that the problem of measure then becomes very difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, it may very well, he has a measure, but
I don't mean to send you to the poem, so to speak, to count literally, but I think you'll find a relationship of that kind. I think he's using it to hold on to. I don't think he's conscious of it. I think it's intuitive, so that you'll find variance. And you find, as Robert says, a variety of rhythms. But it keeps him on this track that's allowing him to speak. It's a poem the content of which must have been extraordinarily volatile, so that the problem is how to keep saying it until it's all been said.
Thinking of when we went way back there to take hold of Wordsworth's formulation, emotion recollected in tranquility, or the formulations of the that you and I have been concerned with as the projective verse and the formulations Olson made. Any movement or anything alive coming up in poetry seems to come about with new formulations that really kick in the face, in a way, as the preceding ones. Yeah. So that we know, sitting here, that if any of you are poets at all, you will kick us in the face.
But your formulations come after the writing, don't they, generally?
No, the formulations of projective verse came before. And any formulations I made, my goodness, between the formulations made of 52 and anything that resembles them happening in writing, it's letters before they ripen, those formulations of 52, and I don't think there are any formulations for me since. At least technically, I don't think that I've developed.